Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
This episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast is sponsored by Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box that is full of awesome geek and gamer items, as well as pop culture gear. For less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items that include t-shirts, collectibles, and a unique one-of-a-kind items. Pop culture is full of brave new worlds and societies in flux that don't always turn out for the best. And June's theme will be exploring some of the ways things can go wrong with dystopia. Featuring classic RoboCop, Terminator 2 Judgment Day, and The Matrix, and new favorites like Bioshock Infinite and Fallout 4, they've got a cool figure, cool collectibles, and of course, a dystoporific monthly t-shirt. Still there, dystoporific. Here's the important part. You have until June 19th at 9 o'clock p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's crate. If you miss the deadline, you are out. You're going to miss out on the dystopian crate. So make sure you head over to lootcrate.com/spoilers, enter the code SPOILERS, and save $3 on any new subscription. Really, it's that easy. Then all you have to do, sit back and wait for the awesome Loot Crate to arrive at your door, and enjoy. Remember, head to lootcrate.com/spoilers, use the code SPOILERS to save $3 off your new subscription. Thank you, Loot Crate, for sponsoring this episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast.
Yay, podcast night!
This episode is brought to you by Major Spoilers VIP members.
VIP stands for very important people, and their small monthly contributions ensure that this podcast remains free for all of you.
If you would like to become a bronze, silver, or gold VIP member, go to members.majorspoilers.com for more information.
I sure do thank you for your support. Now, here's your show.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into detail about the topics discussed. So, if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items they talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans, just like you. And you.
It.
And you.
It. It is a show. A big change in how many of us get our comic books. A tooth and nail battle between citrus and pomaceous. And a heap and helping on the Major Spoilers perspective on all that's popping in your culture. Titans are reborn. Heroes are first. Heads are jugged or something. Plus,
into any generation, a show is born. One podcast in all the world. A chosen one.
So, thanks for choosing this one. You won't regret it. The Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 681 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sharing this episode with a friend. And thank you, everyone, who's using that Amazon link at majorspoilers.com for all of your purchases. Remember, it doesn't cost you anything extra, but a little bit comes back our way and allows us to keep this show going week after week. This week, we will be taking a look at Buffy, the High School Years, Freaks and Geeks, a trade paperback from Dark Horse Comics. It's a bit later in the show, but first, we have some news. We've got three items for this week, and then, of course, we will spin the magic wheel of destiny. The first one is Hastings is in trouble. Mr. T is coming to Lego Dimensions, and Donald Glover has been cast in a secret role for Spider-Man Homecoming. Let's spin that wheel of destiny. Let's see where we land. And there it lands right there on Hastings is in trouble. Now, for those of you who don't know what a Hastings is, it doesn't surprise me because it's a chain store. It's got about 126 locations nationwide, mostly in mid-sized cities. But Hastings is kind of your books, movies, games, and more store. Mm-hmm. And we have had one here in our local city for maybe 10 years, something like that. But word came out on Friday, and then again, kind of confirmed it today when they filed for bankruptcy, that the company's in a bit of trouble. They are deeply in the hole. Now, the weird thing is, and I had been asking this for probably a couple months now. I don't know if I'd asked you, Rodrigo, maybe even before you left, maybe a year. But our local Hastings was running like really odd sales at odd times of the year, like Most of the time you think a sale would come during a holiday, a major gift-giving time, back to school, graduation, that kind of stuff. But no, all of a sudden, just in the middle of a week, they'd pop up a 50% off a bunch of Funko Pop stuff. Buy one, get one free. 25% off RC cars. You know, this aisle, you know, 60% off.
And I kept asking, buy an RC car, get an RC cola.
Yes. And I kept asking people, and this has been going on for months now. I was like, are you guys hear anything about Hastings? Are they going out of business? What's going on? And everyone was like, no, I haven't heard anything about it. That would never happen. Hastings is a great store. And I would agree that it's a great store. But when I start seeing odd sales like that and discounting action figures for 75% off, something tells me that someone's trying to bleed inventory or get rid of inventory as quickly as they can to make some money. And sure enough, on Friday, Hastings issued a statement that basically said they've been trying to overcome a business challenge and they just can't do it. And right now they are trying to seek a buyer, and they have told all of their employees that at the end of 60 days, if they have not found a buyer, they will close their chain. Now, for some people, you might be going, ah, it's a books and everything store, big deal. For many people, it is the only comic book store in an area. And for us, it is our only physical comic book store in about a 200-mile radius. And so for a lot of people, Hastings closing means, hey, I'm going to lose access to comic books. I'm going to lose access to, you know, the things that go with it. Maybe it's also a gaming store. So not only video games, but your board game location. For people who don't know, Movie Shop is also owned by the same parent company as Hastings. They've also started running, about 2 years ago, I guess, they started running comic books in their store as well. That chain will also probably close down in the next 60 days if someone is not, if a buyer is not found. So what are you guys' reaction to this? Is this a big deal, not a big deal?
I think it's a big deal in a couple of ways, but it's kind of a big deal in a smaller pond. Not, you know, certainly not to discount it, because when our Hastings closed maybe 2-3 years ago, it did put several dozen people out of work. I mean, it did change the ability to access the books, the collectibles, the games that you would get, even in Topeka, which is one of the larger cities in Kansas, which is like saying it's the hubcaps on the tractor. But I think that it's one of those things that people will try to downplay because, oh, it's just games or it's just books. And you don't need to read the way you need to go and have food. And I think that it is a big deal. It's kind of a shame that it's not going to be a huge deal, especially if you look at, you know, the Borders chain is gone. Mm-hmm. Stevens B. Dalton closed sometime.
Only exists in airports and strange pocket dimensions.
Yeah. So if you look at how many actual nationwide gaming book type, you know, everything store chains are still out there, as opposed to the overarching presence of your W Marts and your Targets and the such, it's kind of a shame because those specialty stores do fill a particular niche in an ecosystem. Like you're saying, you are going to have to probably drive or, you know, order your comics.
Mm-hmm.
The nearest comic store is at least 200 miles from you if this closes, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So the closest comic book store, physical comic book store, would be Wichita.
Oh, my God. Or, that's like 3.5 hours.
Yeah, or Topeka. Now, the one in Salina, the guy operates it out of his house, and he doesn't – it's not like just a come in and browse kind of thing. It's like you have to place your order, and he will ship them to you. So I still have an outlet to buy my comics.
I believe there's one in Manhattan.
But if I want to go and drive, well, it's just about as far to Manhattan as it is to
it's another hour from Manhattan to Topeka, but yeah.
It's about the same distance. So the weird thing is, and here's the other thing that people may not know, Hastings was bought in 2014 by Draw Another Circle LLC, which is Joel Weinshanker. And he owns the WizKids company, NECA. They produce all of the action figures. And, of course, WizKids does all of the Dice Masters and other gaming stuff. So if Draw Another Circle, I don't know how that impacts WizKids and NECA's NECA's bottom line, if it does at all, or if it's just a separate companies altogether. But I could also spell danger and trouble for two other companies as well. Draw Another Circle bought Hastings from the Marmaduke family in 2014 for $24 million. If the in the notice that they sent out on Friday to all of their employees, they said, I know, let's see, this letter is serving to serve as the official WARN Act notice that lets you know that your job may be eliminated in the next 60 days. Now, while that may be a big deal for the local stores in itself, because our store is pretty big, they probably employ 24 people. But the main warehouse, which I believe is in Austin, Texas, or San Antonio, Texas, they employ 375 people at their warehouse. And so I think this is going to be kind of a bad thing going forward. Rodrigo, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's interesting because Hastings is pretty much the only store of its type for miles there in Hays, Kansas. I mean, it competes with GameStop and it competes with Walmart, but not directly.
No, because the toys are totally different. Now, GameStop would be the closest competitor for video games. You're right.
Right. So, yeah, it competes with everybody in one particular area, but it's the only one. Basically, it's the only one-stop shop for entertainment there around Hays. And it's interesting because I feel that if that Hastings wasn't part of a greater Hastings family, it wouldn't have any problems. You know, it's like it's one of the issue is that the parent company's in trouble, even if each individual satellite is doing fine. You might lose your store because somewhere at the top, they're not managing the money or they're kind of not getting in enough. I don't know. It's like an interesting side effect of that business model, right? Whereas Hastings comes in and basically prevents local stores from opening and doing that. And then just dies on its own, like the aliens from War of the Worlds, right?
Yep.
And then that's it, and then it's gone. And you know, then maybe other stores can open or take over that niche. But yeah, it's just really weird that independent of your local Hastings, it might die because the parent company hasn't been doing things quite right.
Well, but to say that our local Hastings is doing fine is I wouldn't categorize that as a great thing either, because since you've left, the quality of the merchandise in the store has gone down. They're not getting a lot of new things. They haven't. And of course, this would be indicative of the main company not being able to pay suppliers and pay their stuff. But I mean, they end up with a literally right now, there is probably a 40 foot long aisle that is four shelves tall, and then it is nothing but pop vinyls, and those pop vinyls are stacked one on top of each other, three deep. So you can kind of do the math at how many pop vinyls they are back ordered on, or they have backed up on, that they're now selling for 2-for-1 kind of thing. And I said, well, they've got 25% off RC cars. Let me just pick one of these up. We bought it home, got it for a great price. Controller's busted. So now I've got to figure out how we got to get that going. Here's the other thing that's kind of concerning. Hastings is, I believe, Diamond Comic Distributor's biggest comic book client. If you've got 126 stores nationwide and you're buying comics for that on a weekly basis, that's a lot of comics being shipped. And I'm pretty sure that Hastings is their biggest client. We've already seen that comic book sales dipped drastically last month compared to the month before and the year before. With Hastings potentially closing the next 60 days, that could make a huge impact on Diamond as well. So this might have a bigger ripple effect in the industry. What's a solution? What should people do if they don't have a local comic shop anymore?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, there are options.
I mean, there's Comixology.
There are options to order your books by mail. I'm really not familiar with them because I've always been buying my books either locally or lately I've been buying almost all of my stuff digitally. Mm-hmm. Steven finally wore me down on that. But
sure.
You know,
Steven will finally wear you down on everything.
Just yep. So
you
know. Oh, not everything, but many things. But most importantly, I think that, you know, it really is tough because you want to make sure that you are supporting local business wherever you can. I know, for instance, that we now actually have multiple comic stores in town.
Well, in Topeka, maybe, but in Lawrence, no. Because there. They used to have Atomic Kitty. I guess it's still there. Astro Kitty. It is now inside of a retro gaming store on Mass Street upstairs. Mm-hmm. And if you go in, you don't know that it's located upstairs. Because when they're closed, they put a giant standee in the stairwell. So you don't even know that there's a stairwell there.
Mm-hmm. So you gotta follow the signs when they're open.
Yeah. Comic book stores. I hate seeing them close. I really do. But sometimes location and business practices are forcing them to close on their own, not by anybody else's hand.
Astro Kitty still has their weekly D&D. They still have, you know, gaming nights. They have their encounters groups for D&D. They have stuff that they do. And I know there's another game store over there. I think there's a Boom Comics in Lawrence. I know there's one in Manhattan, but it's one of those things where if you have no options at all and you don't want to or can't afford to drive, you may have to either go digital or find a way to order them. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't even know if Mile High or the comics people that I, what was it? Westfield Comics that I used to order from back when I ordered them through the mail in 1992. So probably not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these options do exist. You also have the ability to maybe strike up a relationship with a gaming store that is further away, something like you have, Stephen. Where, you know, you're going through that store, you're ordering through that store.
Comic book store.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens. Hopefully in the next 60 days, they find a buyer. I don't know who would want to buy it if they are in that kind of a turmoil.
Well, and it's possible that it would be multiple places,
it
right?
It could be. There's a good chance that they could sell off their movie shop to one group. They could sell off the Hastings to another group. They could sell off another...
Do they own
Movie Shop, but they don't own GameStop.
Okay.
It could be like, I will give you everything north of the Mason-Dixon line.
It could be that. Yeah. I mean, it could be that. Let's hope that they're able to find something, because I'd like to see our store stick around. I'd like to see it improve. I mean, our local store drastically improved when Hastings made the firm comic book commitment back in, I want to say 2010, somewhere around there, 2010, 2011. And they started bringing in fact, they probably have one of the larger back issue collections right now, too, because every store then had racks and racks and racks and boxes of back issues. They may be maybe something to look at if someone has, I guess they probably only need $24 million. It's not a whole lot to pick up and run. So here's hoping.
Depending on your definition of a whole lot, yeah.
Well, compared to like LinkedIn, which was bought for what, $24 billion or something from Microsoft this week.
Yep.
So, the $24 million is not a whole lot. Some people had suggested, maybe Amazon pick it up. I don't think Amazon would pick it up. It doesn't do them any good to do that. But
it doesn't seem to fit their business model.
Turn them all into FedEx stores.
Maybe. Who knows? All right. Listeners, if you want to share your feedback on this, head over to majorspoilers.com. And I realize Hastings isn't a big thing for a lot of people, but I know that there are many people who rely on Hastings. So we thought we'd share that news with you this week. But we'd love to hear your thoughts. Head over to majorspoilers.com on that. You can also find out more about Mr. T and the A-Team coming to LEGO Dimensions. And soon, hopefully, we'll find out what role Donald Glover is playing in that new Spider-Man movie.
Until then,
let us do some reviews.
Reviews.
Rodrigo, why don't you start us off this week with First Hero Wednesday's Child? These are all new comics out this week that we will be reviewing.
Yeah. So the First Hero Wednesday's Child number one. I was like, his name First Hero. And then it's the number one. This will be great. Firstest thing ever, and it's like, actually this is the third volume of First Hero.
Yeah.
So I was jumping into some nonsense here, but I didn't realize that it's not too bad. So this comes at the end of like some crazy crossover for Action Lab. It's like the Action Verse.
Yeah, the Action Verse.
Mm-hmm. Which I didn't read. Even not knowing that going into this comic, there's really not that much that it doesn't explain. I mean, it is like the beginning of a new volume and it kind of runs you through everything that's going on. So basically, this guy, Jake, has the power to blast things Which, you know, is not that crazy of a superpower, but he lives in a world where usually people who have superpowers turn evil, basically. They just turn into super bad killer people. And he's like the only one who doesn't do that. So he's not the first hero in that. He's the first person to, or only person to have superpowers, but rather he's the first one to not turn evil. in this story, he is contacted by someone who might be another person who doesn't, who has superpowers and doesn't go nuts. But then there's a lot of like mysterious, like, you know, they make contact and then afterwards, like, oh yeah, I talked to Jake and ha 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 ha, he doesn't suspect nothing. So, there's some weird stuff going on there. This is not really a book that I'm too interested in. The premise is okay. And again, it being, you know, the start of a new volume, it gets you up to speed. But it's just not for me. The art is good. Really, it gets along pretty well on character design because all the characters look distinct from each other. All the characters look interesting. And it is largely just people wearing normal clothes. But it manages to keep that going and keep that interesting, right? It's like no gaudy superhero stuff or anything like that. Just, you know, it's like a redheaded guy and like some flannel, and like the main character just has like a white t-shirt or like a white button-up shirt with like the sleeves rolled up. And like, that's kind of how he runs around. And, you know, like it looks good. It looks fine. I'm going to give it 2.5 slices of meatloaf. It's, you know, just straight on the line for me. I'm not super interested in picking it up, but if I see issue 2 come across, I'd maybe flip through it. Again, nothing wrong with it. I don't mean to put it down, but it's kind of not my thing.
All right, cool. That's fine. Matthew, you have a comic book from Archie Comics this week.
I do. Archie Comics Jughead number 7, written by Chip Zdarsky, with art this month by Derek Charm, who I was not familiar with, but I actually really like.
Would you say his art is charming?
I would not. But more importantly, sorry.
On principle.
Man, you know so many jokes, Matthew.
You know what? After 6 years, I owe you just one or two. Now, Jughead Jughead, he said, beginning his sentence for the 9th time, has been a fascinating series. The new Archie stuff has all been really, really interesting and strangely new and different and wacky and modern while being very traditionally true to what Archie has always been, which is an incredibly difficult proposition. And this issue keeps that up. It starts with Juggy on his summer vacation after banishing the evil principal Stanger, stuck at home until Mr. Jones tells him to get the hell out of the house and go do something summery. And it's a really wonderful interaction. He sends him off to find Archie because Kevin is already off with his dad in the woods somewhere and having to eat squirrels. So he finds Archie. He talks Archie into taking some vacation time in a very, very clever and awfully gross Jughead fashion. I'm not going to spoil it. Let's just put it this way. Chip Zdarsky outdid himself with this. And so Jughead and Archie decide that they're going to go and hang out at the cabin that Dilton's family has, that he said that they could always spend time at if they wanted. Now, one thing about this issue that I love, and I had not seen because I haven't noticed it in the Archie book, Archie still has his jalopy. But his jalopy now seems to be like a 2002 Nissan ZX held together with crazy glue and tape.
Yeah, that's been a main thing in the main Archie comic.
Has it? I haven't noticed it.
Betty's always tinkering around with it.
That's cool. Archie, you know, traditionally Archie's jalopy was like a Model T or something. But when they get to the cabin, they discovered the worst possible thing ever because they came to the woods for no jerks. And they meet immediately a jerk. And the first words out of Jughead's mouth are, "This guy's like a muscled up Reggie Mantle." At which point, Reggie Mantle shows up and says, "I'll have you nerds know I've been working out all summer. And what are you doing up here at the Mantle family reunion?" Every member of the Mantle family is a jerk. And it is truly lovely to behold. And they're all wearing numbered shirts, which I think is wonderful, too. Reggie's is number one, and Muscle-Bound Cousin is number two, and Grandpa is number 61. And, of course, Juggy and Archie are tortured immediately, completely, by every single member of the Mantle family, from great-grandpa Mantle, who gives Archie a wedgie, to a little five-year-old Mantle who goes and does the ultimate unforgivable sin in slapping the burger out of Jughead's hand.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. I really love this issue, I got to tell you. And as it ends, there's another thing that happens. And again, I don't want to spoil this because half the fun of reading these books is not expecting where they're going in many ways. Suffice to say that it goes a place that I go, oh, now we're in big trouble. And the final page reveal is a coming next issue, which Zdarsky immediately goes, wait, if I do that, I lose my job? Okay, maybe that doesn't happen next issue. We'll all find out in Jughead number 8. I'm not saying that they maybe get eaten by a bear. I'm not saying they'd not get maybe eaten by a bear, but I am saying 3.5 slices of meatloaf for Jughead number 7. I really enjoy this book. I like this book in the way it reminds me of all the Jugheads I read when I was a kid. It reminds me of every Jughead you've ever read in every line when you're bored at the Dillons. But it does really interesting, new, funny, modern things with it. And at that point, you know, you can't go wrong. I cannot believe that in the year 2016, Archie is giving us some of the most creative and entertaining stuff on the stands. It's like black is white, up is down, and short is long, and I don't know what to make of it. But I do know this is a funny book, and you should definitely check it out.
Cool. All right. Also out this week from DC Comics is Titans Rebirth number 1, written by Dan Abnett with art by Norm Rapmund, and I'm guessing coloring by Brett Booth. This is another of the Rebirth titles, and it kind of follows on, well, it follows on the heels of two things: Titans Hunt, which we've talked about on the Dueling Review podcast and elsewhere on the Major Spoilers website. And of course, DC Universe Rebirth, which sees the return of Wally West to the DCU and this greater conspiracy that something out there is manipulating us and making us dance like little puppets. And oh, by the way, those people have also removed me from all of your memories. So I guess following up from Flash number 1, Flash Rebirth number 1 that we reviewed last week on the Dueling Review podcast, Wally has decided to make his way to see the Titans and try to figure out what's going on and hope that they remember who he is. And of course, no one remembers who he is. So a lot of this issue is, hey, who's this guy that has broken into Titan? I don't think they're in Titans Tower. Where are they at? Are they back in Rhode Island or whatever? Under a rock?
Yeah, I believe they're back in like Grover's Corners or something. Yeah, yeah.
So Nightwing comes in and is like, hey, what are you doing, man? And Wally West is like, Dick, don't you know? And he goes, how do you know I'm Dick? And so they fight. And then as the rest of the Titans come in, they're all fighting. And then as Wally starts to touch each one of them, a spark springs from his hands and strikes them. And then we start getting these little flashbacks of what they consider important moments in Wally really being a friend to each of them, or a lover or whatever to each of the Titans. And so then they're like, oh, Wally, where have you been? And I don't ever remember you, but I know who you are. And so then Wally starts to explain what's going on. And then that's where the issue ends. So this is kind of a taste of what, you know, what's happened. It's kind of a refresher course for anyone that doesn't know who Wally West is and his relationship with the Titans. I enjoyed the story. I thought it was kind of cool that it is pretty typical heroes meet. They don't know each other. They fight. They work out their differences. The end kind of thing. But I think it's kind of resetting Wally West in the DCU. It's certainly de-aging him by 10 years at least. And because now he is not connected with Linda Park anymore, we're probably going to see, as the story progresses, we're going to see that love story start to come back into play over time. What does this mean? I mean, one of the things I had mentioned during Titans Hunt was, what was the guy's name that was the big bad?
Mr. Twister.
Mr. Twister. I said, oh, he's probably going to be like the psycho pirate of this whole Rebirth event. And Mr. Twister's name does come up multiple times in this issue about, oh, he's the one manipulating everyone's mind. He is someone that we shouldn't trust. So there may still be some Mr. Twister action before this is all said and done. The art is fine. I'm okay with Wally's costume. It's all red, except for the Flash logo in the middle is silver. And then he's got, instead of a gold lightning bolt for his belt, he's got a silver lightning bolt for his belt. The thing
does
that
he still have the open headpiece?
Yeah, and the top is open just like the original Kid Flash costume was, but it's all red except for that. So his hair pops out of the top, and I'm okay with that. It feels very Wild Stormy for some reason. I don't know why.
It's Brett Booth's design work.
I am not a big fan of the coloring in this issue because the way they color Wally's costume is it looks like it's like got purple and blues and silvers all over it when it really doesn't. And I think what they're trying to suggest is that the costume is super shiny and super reflective, and it's reflecting all of the light around the room on his costume, which looks kind of ridiculous and silly. But the costume idea I'm okay with. If they're trying to separate with all of these 20 different Flashes running around with the name Flash, separating them by leaving the top off, I'm okay with. I think it's a good kind of refresher issue. And I really want to follow these adventures of Wally West to see how he copes with his return to the DCU, and more importantly, how DC Entertainment deals with Wally West's return to the DCU. I liked it. I say pick it up. It's I'm giving it 4 out of 5 slices of meatloaf. So there you go. There are some reviews for everyone. If you want to read more reviews, I think we have up to date now. We have all of the first week Rebirth issues out there. I know Wayne posted a Aquaman Rebirth today, and so that should have gotten all of the first week's Rebirth stuff in. This is the start of our second week of Rebirth. Trying to see what other Rebirth issues come out this week. Batman number 1, Titans Rebirth, Green Arrow, Superman, Green Lanterns, and of course Scooby Apocalypse number 2 comes out this week. Those are probably the big ones from DC this week in regards to Rebirth.
Is Wonder Woman 1 this week?
No, Wonder Woman was last week's Wonder Woman Rebirth was last week, so the next one is next week. So a lot of the issues like Batman is biweekly, Wonder Woman is biweekly. Superman is definitely biweekly. I don't remember if Green Lantern is biweekly or if it's Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps and then you have the Green Lanterns. I forget how that works, but
that is right, where they alternate.
And I'm pretty sure Aquaman is biweekly as well. So be looking for that. Make sure your pocketbook is prepared for that. But on the plus side, everything's $2.99. If you want to check out other reviews that are not DC related, make sure you head over to majorspoilers.com. This week on Dueling Review, Matthew and I will be taking a look at Civil War II number two this week.
Civil War II number two, which makes 4.
Definitely want to check that out in the listing. And then if you want to hear Zach and I talk about, what are we talking about? Not Nice Guys, because we talked about that last week. Oh, we're going to be talking about a little film called Big in Japan. It's an independent film that will come up this week on Zach on Film. This week, I give you a heads up on a Munchkin coloring book on Munchkin Land. And there's a whole lot more in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. What I'm going to suggest is that everyone take the podcast challenge. I know it's summertime. You've got a lot more free time while you're mowing the grass or out walking the dog or whatever. Here's my suggestion to you. If you're not already listening to all of our podcasts, find one of our other podcasts that we do. There's 7 or 8 of them. And I want you to listen to one show for a whole month. Just sample it. Try it out. And at the end of the month, if you don't like it, that's fine. Put it back. Try something else for another month. But what I want you to do is sample 4 episodes of any of our shows, and not random episodes. Listen to 4 consecutive episodes. See what you like, and hopefully you find something else new. We've got a lot of stuff going on at Major Spoilers, and we love sharing it with you. It's all part of the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. All right, that is out of the way. Let us get to the poll of the week.
Poll of the week.
This week, we ask the simple question. Which fruit do you prefer more, apples or oranges? It's pretty straightforward. Matthew, what did you pick?
Well, of the two fruits chosen, the only option for me is oranges because I've never liked apples. And there's something about it texturally, I think, when you bite into it, when you're biting through that exoskeleton, like a giant crustacean
it's
or
not
something.
Quite an exoskeleton.
Yep, that's I don't know about it.
The thing about it, though, is there are certain brands of apples that are less so. There's like these yellow orange ones that Widget used to get that I liked.
Golden apples.
I don't know. They're not golden. They're not like yellow. They're orange.
The Golden Delicious, like big yellow ones.
But they're really, really good, except in as much as they're not as good as an orange. But the thing about an orange is a huge pain in the butt to peel. So if you were saying, what fruit do you like best? I'm going to be like bananas. But
no, that's not the choice. It says, which do you prefer more, right? Apples or oranges?
You're literally arguing apples and oranges. Yep. I had to go with oranges.
Yeah. Rodrigo, what about you?
I like them both. Mm-hmm. I think that I've enjoyed, you know, Apple's work in things like Death Note. I'm very happy for Orange's fame in these past few years since they get to be the new Black. I went with Apple's precisely because even though I greatly enjoy oranges, even navel oranges or even mandarin oranges, there's kind of this literal barrier to entry in that I have to be okay with doing any amount of work. Whereas an apple, I can just bite into it. And that's about that. Of course, the main difference there is that at the end, I have something that I have to dispose of. Whereas with oranges, most of the disposal happens up front, especially with these new super mutant oranges that don't even have any seeds. So, you know, it just kind of goes to what you prefer there. But
the question of where you want your detritus to come in.
Right, exactly. So I think there are lots of different types of apples, and they'll give you different tastes and textures, whereas most different types of orange tend to just kind of run the sweeter to more bitter or more sour kind of spectrum, whereas I think apples kind of go in more directions. So all around, if you told me that I could only eat one type of fruit between these two, I'd probably go with apples.
Yeah. I really don't have a problem peeling oranges. In fact, I peeled one today. I really enjoy eating oranges. I like regular oranges, navel oranges, the little clementine oranges, a blood orange, also delicious, so yummy. I'm not a big fan of apple juice, apple cider kind of drinks. Mm-hmm. But a Honeycrisp apple is the best of all apples, which is why they're the most expensive of all apples. Even the Fiji apple or the Japanese, the Fuji apple, even though that one may be expensive, the Honeycrisp is the best. And if you're ever going to dehydrate apples, I would suggest the Honeycrisp because it just brings out the sweetness in it.
Can you dehydrate oranges?
You can, but they kind of come out chewy.
Yeah, citrus,
and so you have to do
yeah,
it.
Citrus
you have to
in
do
general
it just right.
is very, yeah, citrus usually don't get dehydrated because they are just like so much water by volume, you know?
Yeah, they end up getting really chewy. And I don't know if you've ever had a dehydrated pineapple, but because of all the fibers in oranges and pineapples and stuff, they kind of get kind of sharp in your mouth. And I'm not talking about processed pineapple where it's chunked and then, I don't know, candied or something, and then dehydrated. I'm talking about pure dehydrated pineapples and oranges. Strawberries are also one that do not dehydrate well. They just kind of turn into a gummy mess, and you really have to dehydrate them a long time and add some other preservatives on them to really keep them fresh. And then the flavor of a dehydrated orange is just like too intense. You have to make sure that the orange is sweet when you do it, because otherwise if it's bitter, it burns your mouth basically when you taste it. Apples are a natural source of Prozac. So the old adage of an apple a day keeps the doctor away may be right up there, which is why I pick the apple as my favorite fruit of the fruit that I prefer of those two.
Prozac, cyanide.
So there you go. So there you go. Matthew, two votes for apples, one vote for oranges. How has everyone else voted right now?
67 votes in total right now, 55% leaning towards the apple, 45% to the orange, which means a difference of about five, six votes. So this one can still go either way. I think the big question is really going to be, you know, you both touched on the variety thing. There's
a good variety.
Varieties and shapes of apples than there are oranges because, I mean, an orange is named for being orange.
Which is interesting because the color orange did not exist until they discovered oranges.
Well, yeah, until it really got popularized by the fruit, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really odd. It's one of those, which came first, the orange or the orange? And it's like, they both came at the same time.
Yeah, that's why we talk about redheads, even though the majority of quote unquote redheads have orange hair.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, potentially why say like something like the Irish flag, which is, you know, Irish red, why that would be considered a red, even though I think by most people's categorization, that would definitely be orange.
Mm-hmm. And now somebody's probably going to pop up, but Stephen, what about carrots? They've been around forever. Until I forget when it was, carrots were purple. Mm-hmm. And the Dutch actually bred the carrot to be orange. And that's why we have orange carrots today. And I'm pretty sure that's also why we have white potatoes today, because I believe the original potato was a purplish blue.
Mm-hmm. Carrots come in all colors. You can still buy blue and white and, well, yeah, purple and white carrots. And I think green carrots as well.
Yeah. So I just find that interesting about the color orange and the orange. I love them both. I mean, nobody here in the household will eat oranges unless they're the halos, the little clementine oranges,
yeah,
that mm-hmm. are super easy to peel and have yeah. no seeds. But yeah, I just picked up all the clementines were not in stock at our store. Uh-oh, I think that's a sign our Walmart's going to go out of business.
Stop.
And so I just picked up a bag of regular oranges. I don't have a problem peeling them. Just pop them in and eat them. Yum, yum, yum. But
I get my fruits in like smoothies. Yeah. Seriously, they're easier to carry for me because I spend my day locked in a box with grandmas.
Yeah, just put them all in the blender before you go to work.
Yeah, get the smoothies with that. You get the banana, strawberry, banana, orange. Oh, that's good. And it's Tim, the orange that makes a difference.
Tim says nothing beats the satisfying crunch of an apple. Oranges are too high maintenance. Ingrid says it really depends what variety of fruit are we talking about. Honeycrisp are really good. Delicious apples are dreadful. I would agree with that. How big are they? How messy are they? If oranges are hard to peel, are they blood oranges or caracaras? Those are really tasty.
Man, Ingrid, are they properly you make fruit ripe? Complicated.
What time of year is it? Which is in season? Besides, I actually prefer pomegranates. That's not a question.
And what about Naomi?
Ray says I find apples more varied in their use than oranges. For example, cooking with apples seems to offer more of a selection than cooking with oranges.
Right.
Frederick says apples. As a New England native, I associate apples with the fabulous fall season, which includes treats such as caramel apples, hot apple cider, crispy apple donuts, and of course, warm apple pie topped with vanilla ice cream. Eric says there's a reason nobody asks for orange pie.
That is not true. I always ask. There is a place here in town that does a wonderful orange meringue. And it,
you know, I mean, if you've ever had orange preserves, they're not bad. They're just
no.
specific, but that's mm-hmm. basically what goes into pie anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
By the way, some of the most amazing stuff, I don't know if you've ever seen those like little bottles of Fuji apple preserves. That is that's really fantastic stuff.
I don't know what kind of fancy foods you're eating up there in the Northwest, Rodrigo.
Listen, man, you know where I got these? I got this at Clemma's Apple Market in Russell, Kansas.
Yeah. The fall is really, spring, summertime is great for oranges. But then probably in about 2 weeks, the peaches will all come in season up in Denver. And so we'll get a buttload of peaches down here. And the kids will blow through the peaches very quickly. And then right around August, all the varieties of apples all the way through November will start filling up the stores, and I will just pick through them and find some great ones. And that's when that price actually comes down on the Honeycrisp. So that's actually the best time to buy the Honeycrisp apple.
But, I do love a hot apple cider in the fall.
Yeah. I don't know what it is about. I mean, to me, apple juice is just too sweet because of all the sugar and whatever is put in there. Apple cider is less
processed.
I don't
know that they have to put, like, most juice that you get in the store is mostly pear juice, regardless of what you're actually buying.
But,
and that's because pear juice is, like, naturally super sweet.
But cider, there's something about it, too, that I just don't care for. I mean, I'll drink it. I like applesauce.
Mm-hmm.
I like apple pie. In fact, the farmer's market this week, I bought a very nice apple crisp that we devoured. But man, there's something about those two drinks that I just can't stand. I'm not a big orange juice drinker either, but that's more of my upbringing.
Orange juice is one of those things where I will occasionally just have a craving and have to get a big bottle and drink all the orange juice.
And then lay down and sleep for about 3 days.
No, I'm not a bear, Stephen. But the thing about it is it really is weird and it's cyclical. In the summer, you could not get me near orange juice with a 10-foot pole. because 105 degrees, I don't want to be, you know, drinking sweet, cloying kind of glurpy juice.
Yeah, and orange juice is really sweet. That's one thing that people don't get a lot of the time is that they're like, oh, it's okay. I'm drinking fruit juice. And it's like, even if it's pure fruit juice without any sugar added, both apples and oranges have massive amounts of sugar in them. Like that's the thing to
keep in mind is natural sugar versus processed sugar.
Well, it doesn't matter. Sugar, like if a diabetic drinks a whole bottle of orange juice, they're still going into a natural, perfectly organic coma.
Oh, sure.
So,
yeah, that is just one of the downsides.
That's something that like people don't think about. They have this, and it's exactly that thing that you brought up, Steven, is that processed versus natural thing. It's like, it's okay. This is good sugar. It's like, yeah, no, it's sugar. It's still going to go through your thighs if that's what you're worried about, and it's still going to give you a high and give you a crash.
You need some insulin is what you're going
to
need.
When I go to my in-laws' house, we always drink fresh squeezed orange juice. They'll get up like an hour early, and I'll just wake up and I'll just hear them grinding the orange juice out. And it's pretty good. I like fresh squeezed. That's probably the only one that I like. So
why would you do that, though?
Fresh squeezed is good. It tastes good.
But that's like people who get up an hour early to make breakfast. I'm like, dude, Denny's is 10 minutes away.
They're old. You know,
that's just scary. they'll be up at 4 a.m. anyway.
Yeah,
they had dinner at 4:30 and went to bed at 6.
They're hungry by then.
Yeah,
exactly.
Listeners, I want to point you to a super awesome deal from our friends over at Tweaked Audio. If you don't know what Tweaked Audio is, they're these great little earbuds. You pop them in. They come in all different styles, varieties, colors, but they sound great. I've been biking with mine for the last week, and they don't come out. Still able to hear the traffic as they zip by. Earbuds are designed for great music and talk. They're engineered for durability. And best of all, if you go to tweakedaudio.com, use the checkout code MAJOR, you're going to get 33% off your price. It's a great deal. And we want to thank Tweaked Audio for being a very long time, very cool sponsor of the Major Spoilers podcast.
Hey, Steven.
Yes.
Do you know if that applies to anything you purchase?
Anything that you purchase at Tweaked Audio, use the checkout code MAJOR.
I was looking through and they had some accessories too. Like they have cases and things like that.
Oh, yeah, cool.
So
storage bag.
I was curious about that. Yeah.
Yeah, do it. Go for it. I'm pretty sure it's anything at tweakedaudio.com because they're awesome people. And I'm sure one of them is listening right now and they will let me know if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's everything.
Okay. Hopefully because they'll tell us if we're wrong.
Well, no, the new earbuds that I got, the sport earbuds, they also fall into that category. So I'm going to imagine that.
Pagonese, I believe it is in the classical Greek.
Is that what it is? I don't know. But they're orange and gray.
She married Medea and murdered her children or something.
Mm. Okay. Let us switch gears now and go back, all the way back to, 1995? When a little show debuted on the WWWWB.
Don't ever do that again.
Nope, that's what they did. That was their thing in 95, 96.
It's like officially.
Hello, my honey. Hello, my baby.
No, that's when it launched. But for everybody, I mean, even Sarah Michelle Gellar, I mean, you can go back and watch those old promos. Anybody who had a show on the WB had to do a promo where they were like, you're watching the WWWWB. So way back in the long time ago days, there was a little show that debuted called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And it followed kind of a television sequel to the movie that didn't star Sarah Michelle Gellar, but had Buffy pick up and move from San Diego to Sunnydale.
Sunnydale,
yeah.
Where she met her new watcher and she had a bunch of friends and she had fun adventures. And they went on for many, 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 many years. And then a comic book started forming. And they started continuing on from where the series left off with season 10, season 11. I think they're about ready to start a season 12. But in all of that, Dark Horse Comics also said, hey, we want to tell a story that happened during the first year of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And so we've got this 4-issue trade paperback, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the high school years, Freaks and Geeks trade paperback that we are looking at this week. And I guess I can get behind the Freaks and Geeks tag on this.
Yeah, it's an intentional reference, I think.
Sure. Yeah, because you have everybody trying to be cool and trying to be friends and trying to fit in. And it's not just Buffy and Willow and Xander, but it's also some vampires, Matthew.
Some geeky vampires?
I think so. I mean, they do role-playing games. They want to be they want to be cool. But every time they go somewhere, they're never cool. Even when they go to the vampire club that's only supposed to be for vampires, an exclusive club, they're kicked out.
Well, it's exclusive, but exclusive to them. They are excluded. But yes, and of course, the de facto leader of the nerd vampires comes up with a plan. She says that the cool kids will like her if she only murders the Slayer.
Oh, man, that's like the plot of every High School Musical.
Yeah, it happened in The Craft.
If only we can, if only we can play like Slayer, we will be the cool kids.
Have you ever heard Slayer?
There was,
I can give a bass guitar to the cat. Oh, never mind.
There was this really, you guys remember MTV VJs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of them was this guy.
Matthew and I are old, so yes.
Sure.
We were around when MTV launched.
This was a broader, like, I'm setting up this topic.
Okay.
One of the latter day VJs was this kid, like this really dumb kid named Jesse, and they did this whole promo about how he was really excited that basically they were going to have on his show Sarah Michelle Gellar as a host or as a guest, and he did this whole promo talking about how excited he was that Slayer was coming and he was going to get to interview them, and then there was like this other band called Buffy the Vampire that he hadn't heard of, and it's just like just went on and on and on. It was like, and I remember seeing this promo like 20 times because back in the day I was actually watching MTV because they actually played music.
Hey, Fergie. That would be 1999, man. How old are you?
33.
Yeah. That was Jesse Camp, by the way. He's a terrifying human being.
So how does this plan go for the vampires, Rodrigo?
It actually starts going kind of well once they get into Mean Girls territory. Like, they basically come at the Slayer straight up. And in a very uncharacteristic way, Buffy doesn't just murderize them immediately. That's actually the only real problem that I have with this book. But we can get into that later.
Right.
So they start messing with her. They're like, hey, your friends don't actually like you, man. And then they're like, vampires away. And then they run away. And then she's like, oh, no, my friends don't like me because the vampire said so. And then Buffy starts acting super weird.
Yeah. Well, to their credit, they are undead minions of evil. But they actually overheard a conversation between Xander and Willow implying, you know, because Buffy states outright at the beginning of this that she used to be like Cordelia in the Mean Girls.
And this
in
is,
her old school.
And this because of first season, Cordelia is just this very petty, mean person that Xander is totally in love with. But at the beginning of this trade paperback, she's walking down the hallway and just basically brushing them off again, Mean Girls style. And so, yes, Buffy was like, yeah, I kind of used to be that way, or not didn't used to be that way, but I used to be more popular and used to be able to do things. And that has Willow kind of freaked out about. Maybe she doesn't like us.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, justifiably so from the teenage mindset. When you're a teenager, you have these questions. And by teenager, I mean I'm 45 and I still have these moments. But it seemed like it made sense in character, as Buffy is a new person at their school at this point.
Yeah.
Xander and Willow have this established relationship going back to the Yellow Crayon incident in kindergarten. But Buffy is the new girl, and they're not entirely sure of her. And I really like the way that sort of plays out, where they have an expectation, they have a belief about her, but they don't know enough to not question it when people say, well, maybe she is just a mean girl. You have that moment, and it really works, I think, dramatically at this point in the series. If you think back to what's going on in season one, they don't even know Angel's a vampire yet at this point.
Yeah, there's
by the way, 15-year-old spoilers.
Yeah, there's also a a reference to that where they're trying to say, oh, you know, we're making friends with different people. And this is also back when Willow was still interested in Xander as a love interest.
Mm-hmm.
And Willow makes a reference to Buffy about, oh, what about that hot smolder steamy guy that keeps popping out at odd times? And she goes, oh, yes, that guy's way 25 or 35 and dating an underage high schooler. Yeah, he's dreamy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's that. as well.
He's actually 265 years old, which is even creepier.
In the end, the evil vampire leader thinks that she has a plot to finally bring Buffy down by summoning a demon. And in order to summon the demon, she must sacrifice her other vampire friends, which means she's not really that good of friends with them.
No, she's a terrible person.
Yeah, she is really a terrible person. And as you might expect, the spell doesn't go quite right. All the vampires are dead. Buffy slays the demon. Everybody goes home as best friends. The end. Until next week when Joss Whedon has some other plot device up his
sleeve. When a demon comes out of the internet.
When an evil teacher lays eggs and controls Xander's mind.
When Jack Ritter turns out to be a robot.
When Isaac falls in love with Cicely Tyson.
When the entire city of Sunnydale comes crashing down into the Hellmouth.
When Fonzie jumps his motorcycle entirely over Arnold's.
When the sister that no one ever knew that Buffy had suddenly becomes a thing and nobody really wanted that to happen.
When the Taco Bell kid is actually a werewolf.
Yes, yes.
When the Riddler traps Batman and Robin on top of a giant cake and lights them on fire like candles.
Man, you've never seen an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, have you?
I love Buffy.
That's such a good show. So the first question then is, does this trade paperback, and it's only four issues long, it's very quick to read, does this feel like a first-year Buffy episode?
No. But.
Why not?
It feels like a shoujo manga adaptation of a first-year Buffy episode, in that it focuses on the emotional relationships between Buffy and her friends. It has all of the demons and the vampires and the stabbity stabbity, and it has Giles in it being smart and Buffy being heroic and Willow being all, you know, sweet and good and kind. But it doesn't necessarily feel like a season one Buffy plot, because Buffy is a show that suffers extremely from what I like to call early installment weirdness. And the first season of Buffy isn't really indicative of the Buffy series as a whole. It's kind of like that first season of, what is that thing with the young Clark Kent, Smallville, in that there's some Monster of the Week stuff going on in that first season that kind of, you know, changes out. But I think it works for me as a Buffy story, knowing what I know about 7 years of Buffy 20 years down the line. It feels like a decent retconned continuity implant telling us a story that certainly could have happened in between the episode, you know, where Xander's teacher laid praying mantis eggs and the one where he was, you know, a swimming star or something.
Rodrigo, what about you? Did you feel that this fell in line with the first season Buffy?
I mean, it definitely, kind of in retrospect, it's definitely a Buffy story. And in fact, I found it to be so in line that it actually came across kind of bland to me, right? It's like, this story is pretty concerned with like fitting in perfectly into the early Buffy universe that it doesn't make any ripples or shake anything up or anything. It is something that actually does just kind of fit perfectly inside that, you know, early Buffy universe to the point where it could be there or not be there.
Yeah. I think the weird thing was that I don't remember the first season having so much vampire-y stuff going on. I mean, vampires would show up. Yes, that was the thing that they killed, and other monsters, etc. But I don't remember the whole vampire nightclub thing, because I thought it was like mid-season or towards the end of the first season when the vampire lord showed up in his limousine and sucked the kid out of the Burger King drive-thru or whatever. but the other thing that kind of pulled me out of this being a episode was the giant demon at the end, because you wouldn't have been able to do that with a WB budget. Yeah. So that was kind of weird, but also knowing that the comic books need to be a little bit different and need to go a little bit over the top, I was okay with the demon part. I will kind of agree that it was somewhat bland and a little bit predictable. But I think that's kind of what the first season of Buffy was kind of about.
Season one of Buffy had the master.
Right.
Who was the guy in the leather suit.
And I think he was there for season two as well.
I think the Master was defeated in season one, but I mean,
okay.
Because I want to say that. Because in season two, that's when Spike came around. Spike and Drusilla.
Drusilla, yeah.
But when you get down to it, a lot of those the first season is really short, too. It's only like 10, 12 episodes. A lot of those early episodes really are kind of episodic monster of the week things, because there's that Invisible Girl episode that falls in there. There's the episode where the biology teacher is replaced by a praying mantis monster.
Is it in the first season where Xander and a bunch of other kids get turned into hyenas?
That is early on, because I want to say so. Yes, because that's where Willow still has a crush on him, and Xander and his hyena pack start acting like
super jerks,
and he puts the hurting on Willow, and that's what makes Buffy want to kill him. So, yeah.
Okay. All I remember is, does this episode have Cordelia in it or not have Cordelia?
Well, there's not a lot of Cordelia in season one.
No, not in season one. So there were probably times where I was kind of tuned out.
Cordelia and Harmony and the other girl, who I don't even know if she had a name, were kind of just recurring Veronica Lodge characters throughout season one.
And it's really
season three, I think, when Cordelia
starts to become more important in the story after the Praying Mantis episode. Because that's when she starts really understanding what's going on, and she starts following them around going, okay, what are you guys doing? This is weird. And starting to question and open her eyes more. So it was after that episode.
She's
that
trying things, to bust them.
Well, not bust them, They're but so, just trying so to bustable. Figure it, just trying to figure it out. So yeah. Anyway, so let's get back to the comic book.
The young vampire, the anointed one. Yeah.
Let's get back to the comic book.
So in this comic book,
here's one thing that I didn't care for. I was okay with the manga art, except for the noses freaked me the hell out. Because it's almost like every time you see a nose, you're looking right up into it. Like everybody's noses are turned up instead of just down. Even when you're like looking at them from above, their noses are like turned up at you. And it's like, this is a freaky, weird stuff. So the noses just bothered the crap out of me this entire time. So the art was kind of hit and miss for me.
See, I wasn't bothered by that because I felt like that was an intentional stylistic choice.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, it is.
A shoujo manga.
But you're not looking up everybody's noses there either.
Yeah, you are, if you do it right. And, you know, Gil Kane made us look up Spider-Man's nose at 5 times an issue. But, again, that's something where if it bothers you, obviously it's something that's perfectly legit in terms of bothering you. I think for me, what it comes down to is, do you remember, and this is a slight digression, when the Batman 66 comic came out, and my first response was, holy moly, Batman is doing superheroic hero stuff that Adam West never did because stuntmen weren't that good. I felt a little bit of that in this because Buffy does some really amazing superhuman comic book style shtick.
Yeah, and if this were TV, this would be all a budget thing.
Right. But it's also a question of it would be difficult to have, you know, the whichever wonderful person it is that dresses up as Buffy during the fight scenes get thrown 30 feet and smashed through a stone headstone. That would be certainly possible. I think you could do it, you know, with practical effects, but it would be difficult. And I think it might even be dangerous. That's my only real complaint about this is what it comes down to is I don't feel like it can feel like an episode of Buffy. But I'm also kind of fine with that. I like the fact that this feels like a take on Buffy done from a specific perspective. You know, it's like a cover of the Beatles in French. First of all, it's the Beatles, so it's kind of awesome. But moreover, you have to appreciate the effort put into it to do a translation that comes through and rhymes. And, you know, there's a bit in here where Giles shows up driving his little Citroën and crashes into the villain to help save the day. And I'm like, that's a nice attention to detail to actually draw the crappy car that Giles had in season one.
Yeah.
You know,
Sophia Crawford is the stunt double for Buffy in the first couple of seasons. So
yeah, and is maybe she the one who is there? There's one stunt woman who is considerably more endowed than Buffy.
I don't know.
And I was listening at one point, Joss Whedon was doing the commentary and he's like, oh, Buffy's got her fighting boobs on.
Rodrigo, what did you not care for in this comic?
Well, aside from the fact that, you know, the comic very early sets up that Buffy just like tears through vampires like they're nothing. And then later on, she, for some reason, decides to have a conversation with them. And I felt that was weirdly out of character. Really, it's just that there was kind of nothing to this story. Like, it doesn't explore the relationship between Buffy and Willow and Xander too much because the show did that, right? Mm-hmm. It can't be the moment that Willow and Buffy become friends. It can't be the moment that Xander's like, oh yeah, Buffy's just not ever going to be into me, or Cordelia's not ever going to be into me, or whatever, right? Like, you can't have those big, impactful, emotional moments because those actually happen in the show. There's kind of, when I got to the end of this, I was kind of like, I wish that this was just like a separate thing. Like, and like, you know, we're all comic book nerds here, like another take on Buffy, another Buffy thing. And right. I think it would be able to come into its own. I mean, I like all the little references, like Buffy actually making a call with a corded phone that's attached to a wall. It's okay, I get it. It's the 90s. It's cool. But, you know, why not just make a new Buffy thing? And I'm sure the reason is because the rights to Buffy are weirdly contentious as it is. But
no, I mean, Dark Horse has all of the Buffy stuff. I mean, like I said, they've been doing season 10 and 11, and I'm pretty sure they're doing a season 12. So they've got likeness rights. They've got, you know, all of that stuff. I just think maybe they were like, hey, here's a story that is perfect for high school because it's dealing with fitting in and peer groups and that kind of thing, as opposed to, hey, we're out of school and we're adults and we're trying to cope with being grownups.
Yeah, really, that's the only real problem that I had with it is that it's a spin-off comic. It's a comic that you get from, you know, scanning a Pepsi product or something like that, right? It's like, it's something that has to happen within the story, but can't change anything because it'll damage the story.
Right.
Yeah.
The overall mythos,
Sure.
To some degree, that actually works as the strength, because if you come in, like, I didn't expect anything out of this because a lot of times those early Buffy comics didn't do anything for me. But what I found in this was it felt like, you know, a cute little interpersonal emotional story about friends coming to terms with each other that you could almost tell anywhere if you remove the trappings of, oh, yeah, one of them, you know, murders deadly creatures in the night. This could have been a story that you might see in an episode of Degrassi. And I liked that. I felt like that kind of almost transcended the fact that it was Buffy. But it really, what it felt like to me was a nice, quiet story that didn't necessarily have a whole lot of high stakes or a whole lot of big dramatic moments, but it had enough emotional heft that, yeah, what is this, 80 pages, 78, 80 pages? I was hooked. I was able to really, really delve into this and think about this and go, yeah, this is kind of neat. It's not an episode of Buffy from season one, but there's enough references. At one point, the evil vampire girl is like, yeah, I got this on eBay. Online shopping's totally going to be a thing, y'all.
Sure.
You know, a nice little moment where, yeah, it's kind of an unassuming story, but it's one that engaged me in a way that a lot of times the old school Buffy books didn't. Yeah, you know, I'm talking about season 8.
Yeah, cool. Bottom line for me is I didn't think this was horrible. I think if you want to go back and revisit a story that could have taken place during Buffy's first year as a Slayer, then this might be worth something checking out. I don't know if I would say go out and buy it. I would definitely say go out and check it out from your local library, because libraries still kind of do that thing. And so, yeah, it was okay. Not the greatest, but definitely worth checking out from a library. Matthew, what about you?
What's the cover price on this baby?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm sure it is less. It's less than $10. I'm gonna bet. Let me look it up real quick.
I will say to you this, faithful spoilerites, friends, Romans, countrymen: if this book is less than $12.99, absolutely, I will say go get it. If it's less than $15.99, I would say go get it if you love your Buffy or you love a nice, you know, kind of a high school manga type tale.
It is $10.99.
Go buy this book because it works as a Buffy story, kind of not. It works as a sort of supernatural story, but it works just as a little arc of kids trying to deal with each other and learning a little something, and one of them being a total jerk and melting all her friends to summon a demon, which, you know, like you do, it happens. I'm not saying I haven't summoned demons by killing my friends. I'm just saying Steven's still alive. So, you know.
Well, first you have to assume that I'm your friend, so there you go.
Well, no, I was actually implying that you were the demon I summoned.
Oh, I see.
Mm. But, you know, stay with me here.
Okay. Yeah. No. Rodrigo, what about you? Final thoughts.
This book exists in a weird place, a place where it's just like this little box that it's not allowed to get out of, but it exists the crap out of it while it's in there. It's got, you know, it's got heart. I like the art. I think actually some of the issues that Stephen has with the nose is because Sarah Michelle Gellar has like a very specific kind of cute little upturned nose.
No, there are times specifically in the issue where it is spot on Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like somebody did a really good job of essentializing Sarah Michelle Gellar in the 90s face. And I would say the same thing for most of the characters, except Willow. I don't think they ever get the Allison Hannigan down, but
no, not even a little bit.
Yeah. But, it's something, I mean, it's something to look at. I would say if you really like Buffy or you would like a no strings attached Buffy book, which is hard to come by nowadays, a book that isn't going to call on you to know 17 years of continuity, definitely pick this up.
All right, there you go, everybody. That wraps it up for this issue. Thank you so much for listening, being part of the Major Spoilers experience. We are going to be back next week because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm going to rearrange your face if you continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce me. Roger's shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. And I don't care if Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash. Or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone. This
podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.